Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Chris Ronchi, Amy Marks-Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
Check it out.
St. Louis, Mound City, we are going to have a great day today.
On 104.1 FM.
Let's take it from the top.
KMOX.
Good morning, friends.
Good morning.
That includes you, Amy.
Thank you.
We are best friends. We are decent friends.
We are paid to be friends.
Oh, dude.
And we are...
Stop.
Thrilled to be here with you.
Hey,
this
Chris,
morning.
Want to get coffee?
6 years ago.
No.
Every day.
Want to get coffee?
And Chris would say, sure. And then 20 minutes before the coffee, can we reschedule?
Accurate.
Something came up.
This is true.
Yeah.
She is not lying right now. Amy Marks-Kors, Chris Ronji, welcome into the show. 9 to noon, Chris and Amy go every single day except for Saturday and Sunday. We've got a lot coming up today, and we want you to participate. 314-436-7900. Leave a voice message from the Odyssey app as well. And if you want to watch us, you can do that. YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. We want you to follow us on Twitter at Chris Amy KMOX. What was that?
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
The Missouri legislative session will end this week, and there is a lot in the hopper. So we're going to talk to Alyssa Nelson with Missouri Net about what to expect this week.
And we need to hear from you today, because guess who's eligible for Cooperstown?
Ugh.
Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Shoeless Joe should be in. He didn't do anything
because
wrong.
Because
he didn't do anything wrong.
Major League Baseball has said, now once you die, all your sins are forgiven, and you can go to the Baseball Hall of Fame if you are so voted in.
And the Cardinals will have a doubleheader today, unless rain in Philadelphia doesn't go away. But it looks like, according to the forecast, they'll be all right.
It's debatable.
I think we're going to play two today. The first
game
happening at 12:05. Which means the pregame show with Tom Ackerman happens at 11:10, and that is how long we are here today. We're with you until just after 11 o'clock, and it's good news that you're here. Speaking of sports, you know how I feel about stadium funding?
Yeah.
Like when the state gives money to billionaires so they can build their stadiums?
Yes, your thought process is, why should I, a regular guy, just trying to make ends meet.
That's right.
Pay for a stadium for a guy who's worth $10 billion.
Exactly right.
Yep.
I don't want to do it. I don't think we should have to do it. I think billionaires should fund their own stadiums. They should figure out a way to do it privately.
Mm-hmm. It's like if I bought a boat and then I made you pay for the dock.
Yeah, kind of. And they say you can use the boat. You got to pay me every time you come to the boat, but you got to use it still.
And you have to build the dock and the house.
So Governor Mike Kehoe had a plan to cover part of the cost, about half of it actually, with a new stadium for the Kansas City Royals and the Kansas City Chiefs. And this is all being done because there was an effort, or at least this threat, that the Chiefs and Royals might move across the state into Kansas. But of course, if they stay here and there is public funding that goes to those stadiums, people in St. Louis are on the hook for that too. Now, you know how I feel about sports. I love that the Chiefs and the Royals are in town or in the state. I love that they are here. I want them to stay here. But by and large, if you go back and look throughout the history of stadium deals that cities and states have given money to, the teams to build or fund their new stadium projects, it usually doesn't turn out well for the cities. It isn't the financial boom that they would expect, right? And I don't want them to leave town. Like, let's say locally, the Cardinals threaten to go to Kentucky. Okay.
Okay.
And we were scrambling to figure out a way to keep them here. I'm not naive. I know that we'd have to give them a little bit of something because that's just the way it works. But I'm not really in favor of taxpayers funding stadiums for people who have billions of dollars.
Yes. And I will say we 100% buried the lead here, because what Ron just trying to say, that Chris Ronji is 100% on board in agreement with Missouri State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman.
I am in agreement with Mary Elizabeth Coleman.
They normally aren't in agreement.
Yes.
They normally aren't in agreement. So State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman is an Arnold Republican. She took issue with this idea of the House rushing through what she called special interest money for stadiums. She continued, quote, "I don't know anybody who goes to the Missouri Senate or the Missouri legislature to pass special interest money for billionaires, but that's what we're being asked to do here." And basically, the state Senate is frustrated that the House approved this funding just days after it refused to allow a vote on a $500 million spending bill. And that spending bill would have funded projects for health care, education, and law enforcement. And they're saying, so wait a minute. You don't want to take the time to work out that spending bill, but go ahead and rush through the stadium money?
Yep.
And so that is why Ronji and Mary Elizabeth Coleman are skipping hand in hand through the anti-billionaire park.
We had a good long hug, the two of us.
This is like when Cori Bush and Josh Hawley were working together on the radioactive waste at Coldwater Creek.
Yeah.
And the Westlake landfill.
See, we can find common ground. I totally agree with this. What also I think is interesting here, and maybe we discussed this months ago when the Kansas, there was a measure on the ballot in KC for this about funding. One of the people who was against it and led the charge against and campaigned against it was Frank White, who is a Kansas City Royals Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Like, this is somebody who played for the team, and he was still saying, no, this is not good for the taxpayer. We're not going to do this, and you should not vote for it. And the people there did not vote for it, because for the most part, the average citizen does not want to pay for a stadium. And I don't blame them. But stadiums, teams, they know that if they threaten to move...
Yeah.
That they could get people riled up enough to say, oh, okay, well, then whatever you want to do. That may have worked more 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. I don't think that works anymore.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Ronch, because I agree. So here's the deal. The plan that was a little sketchy on the details that passed through the House, it says the state, would help pay up to half the cost of a new stadium for the Royals and a refurbished Arrowhead Stadium for the Chiefs, though we're not really totally sure what the overall cost of the plan would be. Now, Representative Chris Brown, a Republican out of Kansas City, said, well, the amount of money would be the exact same funding Missouri would lose out on if the teams moved to Kansas. And I think what's so frustrating about this is this whole idea of generating loyalty and love from the people in the city in which your team resides. You're the St. Louis Cardinals, you're the Kansas City Chiefs, and you're a team owner, and you say, listen, I'm going to invest in this community because I love this community. You have a team, and then the community gives back. The community buys tickets. It buys jerseys. It has generational love for a franchise. It supports that franchise, and it gets really hooked into it, and it becomes a part of the identity of the city. And right when it becomes a part of the identity of the city, the billionaires say, now, we need more money, or we're going to move to somewhere that will appreciate us more. Let me tell you this, I am pro billionaire. I love America. I love the American dream. Get as rich
Who
as possible.
Pro billionaire.
I am, because it's the American dream.
Okay.
Be fine. Like, create
it's
Walmart.
It's the American dream.
Yeah, create
like
Walmart.
Five people get that.
But I bring this up because with owners, let me just tell you this. They are not owning these teams as charitable organizations. This is not altruism on this part to own these teams. They're making an enormous amount of money, and it's a little offensive that then they throw it at the fans' faces, like, give us more money or we're going to go somewhere where they love us more. No, you're doing just fine with Amy, this team. You're making a lot of money.
You are so close to having an epiphany. You're so close and you don't even know it.
Listen.
Here's the thing about being a billionaire.
Bill Gates doesn't own a team.
No, he doesn't.
But he is giving away 99% of his wealth over the next 20 years. And yes, I will say that the good and the efficiency of private philanthropic efforts it's done a lot more than a lot of government organizations have done. So if you are a billionaire and then you start investing in the world and the underprivileged like Bill Gates is, I'm all for it.
That's great, but you can't make them do that.
No, but and there are a lot that why, do. That's why I'm not anti-billionaire.
And there are a lot
I'm
that
just
don't.
Not.
So I think the issue for me is this. A lot of times team owners act like owning a team is a real financial risk. And I could be ruined if things go wrong or whatever. Mm-mm. And they want us to feel sorry for them. Let me give you an example. And I'm not saying the Cardinals do this, but this is just an example. The Cardinals were purchased by the ownership group led by Bill DeWitt for $150 million in the mid-90s. Do you know what the team is worth now?
I do.
$2.6 billion. There is not a major professional sports team that is worth less now than when it was bought. So every single one of these people who own teams, and this goes around the country, all of them are making a massive return on investment. It is not the risk they keep telling us it is. They'll never be financially ruined. If it is such a tough deal, sell the team. Sell the team if this is so financially stressful mm-hmm. to you to own a baseball team or own a football team. If you can't afford it, if you're worried about the cost of building a new stadium, sell it then. Sell it, make a profit, and go away and let somebody else come in and handle it. But they don't sell because they know they're going to make a ton of money off of it one way or another. They know, for example, Jerry Reinsdorf owns the White Sox and the Bulls. He has been trying for about 2 years now to get funding from the state of Illinois to build a new stadium closer to downtown. It's the South Loop is what it's called. And it's a great space. It would be really cool to have a stadium built there. But that would cost the entire state of Illinois tax money in order to do it if they get money from the state, obviously. And J.B. Pritzker has said, nah, no appetite for it. And that's to his credit. And I agree with him.
That's because he's a billionaire and he gets it.
They want. Right.
He does. He's a billionaire. And J.B. Pritzker's like, I know what you're doing here, buddy. I'm also a billionaire.
Right. So fine. But even if he wasn't, I think if he made $100,000, he would probably say the same thing. And he says, we're not giving you $2 billion for a new stadium mm-hmm. project. Fund it yourself. Look what happened with our soccer stadium. Remember how there was this effort to get a measure on the ballot, and it did, and people either had to vote for it or not for a tax incentive to build the stadium, and people here voted it down. Well, guess what happened? The ownership group got together with private investors, and they built it themselves. So it can be done. And I realize that's
maybe
not a baseball stadium.
Maybe you just need
stadium.
Female owners.
Maybe. Maybe need an all-female.
Some female owners of an NFL team because they'll get it.
Well, and they got it done. They got it done. They privately funded that stadium. And it can be done. It's just that why do that when you can get money from the taxpayer?
And listen, I get it. Like, oh, well, they're business people. They're trying to... Fine. Okay, get a good deal. But here's what I don't want is asking for an offensive amount of money from the taxpayers and throwing it in the taxpayers' faces as if you don't care about the team enough and we're moving somewhere that will appreciate it. To me, that's insulting.
It's like,
and it's disingenuous, and no, you're not going to stomach it.
It's like what the Reds team president said. It was either last year or the year before when he was asked about this, Phil Castellini. And I think people were upset with the team, and he's doing an interview, and he says, basically, mm-hmm. Cincinnati is lucky to have us.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Ronch.
That is absolutely not the attitude you ever take if you're an owner of a baseball team or a football team in a city. Never.
Maybe Jerry Reinsdorf is about to get his comeuppance.
How?
Maybe there'll be divine intervention telling him to act better.
Oh, the Pope?
And treat the people better.
Well, I think the divine intervention might come from somewhere else. You know how bad of an owner you have to be when all your fans wish you would die? I'm not making a joke. They literally wish he would die and go away so they could start over.
Well, that's their only hope, right?
Yes, because he sucks as an owner. He is so bad as an owner. That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. We buried the lead, though. Post Malone show was last night here in St. Louis. Huge success from what I heard. We have a story for you, though. That's next on KMOX.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Post Malone and Jelly Roll.
Who kind
is that his
of
name?
Look the same. They just look like different sizes the same
you're
person.
You're kind of right. Jelly Roll just looks like a big Post Malone.
He does. I thought it was Post Malone a couple times.
So they were in town last night, and they played at Busch Stadium. It was reported to be sold out, but it looked like there were a lot of empty seats, especially up high. And I don't mean the ones that were close to the stage where they're bad line of sight. So they try not to sell them. I'm not talking about those, but it seemed like it wasn't completely full. But we did get a comment from Robert who says, hey, good news. Busch Stadium was sold out for once. Robert watching on YouTube. I don't know if it was. Maybe it was, but there were a lot of empty seats there. And I knew people trying to give tickets away and couldn't give them away.
Yeah.
Here's my problem with Post Malone is this. I like him. I like him as an artist.
Yeah.
He seems like a decent fellow.
Okay.
The country flip, I know he's tried it. Beyonce's tried it. She had a lot of success doing that. I'm not into it. It almost feels like shooting fish in a barrel because it seems like it would be very easy to be an artist in some other genre and then say, I'm going to be in country music now. And it's going to go over really well. For whatever reason, it seems easier to hit music.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You only have so long in the spotlight. You're going to milk it for all it's worth. You're going to make as much money as possible. And by doing a country album, you're going to hit a new market, maybe get some new earballs listening to your music and turned on to your work as a whole. I just feel glad that both Jelly Roll and Post Malone have such successful careers because I feel like with that many face tattoos, it's pretty limiting.
I don't think it is anymore.
Searches.
I don't think it is anymore.
I don't know. I
think
don't know.
Tattoos.
I've never seen like a CPA with that many face tattoos.
Well, there used to be. If you're good at being an accountant, you don't. It doesn't matter what. I don't care if my CPA has tattoos on every square
inch.
I'm
not saying you care. I'm saying, would you be surprised?
No.
What?
Not really. Not anymore. Not anymore.
If Kyle the engineer walked in here full of face tattoos, you wouldn't be a little surprised?
I'd be as surprised as if anybody had it. But what I'm saying is I don't think there are.
You'd be surprised we had an engineer.
Well, no, Kyle's very good. Kyle knows what he's doing.
That's what I mean. You wouldn't be. You don't think. I think it's fair to say you don't see a ton of a lot of face tattoo people in traditional jobs.
Well, you don't see a lot of face tattoo people in general.
That's true. But the ones you do see are on stage.
So, well, here's my thing about the tattoos. It's just not as weird as it used to be. Even somebody who had a completely tatted up sleeve, a whole arm of tattoos, that used to be really, wow, look at that. Now everybody has one. You know, they're just so common. At any rate, Post Malone was here. And we were notified by our producer, Matt Pajeski, that he had a great Post Malone story.
No. The opposite of a great story. It was one of the worst nights of my life.
That's what makes it
was
a great story.
Because of Post Malone?
No, he was actually surprisingly great. I went with a girlfriend at the time, and she really liked Post Malone. I like him. He's fine, whatever. I'm just, you know, trying to be a nice boyfriend and go to the show. So it's at the amphitheater. And it is just one of those nights where it's pouring down rain, and it's a torrential downpour, and Post Malone actually performs for like 20, 30 minutes, which I thought was actually great, and then cancels the show because of the amount of rain that's coming down. So, everybody is like flocking to like the bathrooms where they can kind of take some cover, and then they ultimately decide to cancel it, and so we're all like running back to the car, and we are just like floating in our shoes. I mean, like we're like swimming across the parking lot to get to our cars. And you know how bad the Riverport parking lot is. Everybody leaves the same direction out that one exit, and I'm like not in a great mood, and she's not in a great mood, and we kind of just start arguing about whatever.
What'd you do?
I can't tell you. But we're arguing the whole time in the car, and my shoes are soaking wet, which is the worst feeling in the world.
He's brought up the shoes a lot.
Yeah. Well, I hate wet shoes. And we're stuck in traffic for at least an hour, hour and a half, because everybody's trying to leave, and it's wet, and we're arguing, and she gets out of the car and walks around and sits in the back seat because that's somehow, you know, making a point to me. I don't know. It was just one of the worst nights. It was so uncomfortable in that car.
Oh, man.
It was and bad. Damp. It was probably damp in the car.
My butt was damp. My shoes were damp.
And you had a girlfriend all mad at you.
Yeah.
In the
do you
remember seat.
Pouting in the back seat.
Why were you fighting? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Can was you it your fault?
I think it was a little bit of both.
A little bit of both. Yeah. That means it was his fault.
I can tell you. Not for the air, though.
Oh.
What does it rhyme with?
It's not a single word. It's
fleeting. I fleeted on her. Is that what happened?
No.
Were you?
No, trust me. I would not do that. I'm not that kind of guy.
He's not that kind
of
guy.
Okay, you didn't step
He's not
out.
You.
No.
Whoa. Hold on a second, you bum. I would not do that either.
I'm just picturing how moist it must have been.
Oh. There's nothing worse than a moist fight. A moist argument with
your
girlfriend?
Damp.
Your
shoes are wet. Your pants are wet.
Was it hot, too?
It's humid in
no,
the car.
No, it wasn't hot.
But it had to have been humid.
Be
in
the car.
It was humid.
In the car and you're sitting in water. You're just...
And your girlfriend gets out performatively, gets out of the front seat, makes her way to the back seat.
Well, you showed me. I'd love to know if you did some irrational thing during an argument with a significant other. We would love to hear about it. So go ahead and text us 314-436-7900 or leave us a voice message from the Odyssey app. Tell us how irrational you are or your lady friend or your boyfriend or husband or wife. Tell us about it. 104.1 FM KMOX. When we come back, Alisa Nelson with Missouri Nets will talk to us about what to expect the rest of the week in the Missouri legislative session.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Chris and Amy Show, 104.1 FM KMOX. The Missouri legislative session is coming to an end this week, and there is a lot on the docket. So we want to talk about what is happening, what might happen in the next couple of days. Missouri Net News Director Alisa Nelson joins the show to fill us in. How's it going, Alisa?
I'm going to survive. A couple more days. How are you guys?
Maybe as well as you're doing, I guess.
So
yeah, it's a lot of hustle and bustle this final week.
Yeah, we were talking earlier in the show, and so we'll just start with this, and that would be the funding for the new stadium for the Kansas City Royals and the Kansas City Chiefs. And it seemed like it was bipartisan, maybe frustration in the Senate with the House passing this bill to approve special funds for billionaires, as they said. How did that go down this week within the Missouri Senate?
Yeah, that I think that is a good way of putting it, is bipartisan opposition. Really, the House all of a sudden yesterday had this bill on the floor. They were going to do a last vote on a bill that has to do with name, image, and likeness for high school athletes. And this amendment was added to the bill that would give this, it was really this last minute attempt to keep the Kansas City Chiefs and Royals in Missouri with this package that would pay up to half the cost of new and improved stadiums for the teams. And had no idea this was happening, was attached at the last minute. And so the House did that yesterday. And then all of a sudden I look over on the Senate and they have the bill over in the Senate. And I followed it in the Senate, and there was definitely some bitterness and frustration because of something else. And basically, this, unfortunately, this incentives package for the Chiefs and the Royals, the timing on it didn't play in the House's favor because the Senate has some bitterness and frustration over a budget bill that the House happened to, I would say, unexpectedly just kill. It was mainly the House Budget Committee chairman who killed the bill all of a sudden on Friday. And that bill had $513 million in it for construction projects all over the state. Well, since he killed that bill, he didn't give a heads up to the Senate Appropriations Committee chair and many other lawmakers, senators especially, I think, were frustrated about that. So they took out their frustrations on this incentives package to try and keep the Chiefs and the Royals here. And that was mainly what the blockade was about yesterday, was we're frustrated about what happened on Friday. And now all of a sudden we have this bill that is going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and yet the House Budget Committee chairman said we need to save money. That's why I'm killing this bill worth $513 million. So senators really had some questions about I know his hypocrisy. They cited that during their discussions yesterday, and they held the floor for about 6 hours to block a vote on that bill. And so the Senate adjourned yesterday without even voting on it.
So this was killed out of bickering and not out of ideology?
I sensed that, yes.
Okay.
That is what I think, is that they are just really not happy with the lack of communication that happened last Friday. Because of the ideology, I think, by the House Budget Committee chairman saying we have to save money, that's why I killed the bill. And then all of a sudden, this bill that's going to cost hundreds of millions, yeah, all of a sudden it comes up. And so a couple of different things, I think, come into play there.
Man, I love spite. And I think that's how all legislatures should operate, is that just acting out of spite. Yeah, that's good for people.
I think you're pretty close.
Yeah,
we're pretty close to getting there.
That's good for the citizens, I think.
On the same topic. I had a question about the education bills that have been discussed over the past couple of months. I'm a little confused about where we stand with the education bills, specifically when it comes to reading approaches. We have a crisis of literacy across the country here in the state of Missouri, and there were some controversies regarding banning the so-called three cueing system of reading in the state of Missouri, or at least bringing back phonics. Where are we with this whole discussion about reading and phonics in the state of Missouri?
Ooh, that's one topic that I am not familiar enough to really talk about.
Okay.
I know there have been a bunch of different reading efforts that the legislature has funded. You know, there's the Dolly Parton Imagination Library for 0 through 5 to help with reading skills. But, you know, then there's, ever since the pandemic, there have been different funding efforts through the legislature to help get kids back on track. And reading is something that the legislature has really emphasized. And so I know that those have been going on for the past few years, especially. But as far as like the science of reading, I am not aware of like anything specific that I can talk to intelligently that's happening this session on that.
Sure, sure.
Talking to Elisa Nelson with Missouri Net, the news director there, and another measure that is being being done right now, excuse me, is the abortion amendment that was voted on by the people. That was back in November, and Republicans have been trying to roll that back. And it seems like that's moving forward. What is going to happen there?
Well, because of this whole grenade that the House threw on Friday with this spending bill, I am just really uncertain what's going to happen these last 3 days. I think senators are just, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to swallow it and take it and move forward. They all really, I think, they all agree. They want to, at least the Republicans, want to try to get something on the ballot. But at the same time, they can come back and do it next year after they cool their heads off a little bit. They can still get it on the ballot in 2026. And so is that going to pass this year? I'm not sure because of the friction that's going on between the House and Senate. Because when I talked to Lincoln Huff, the Senate Appropriations Committee chair over the weekend, I asked him what, because of the grenade that was thrown on Friday, what does that mean for the rest of session since there's 1 week left? And he's like, well, it might be challenging for a House bill to get passed in the Senate. And that is a House bill for the abortion measure that would put that would ask the voters if they can pretty much overturn most abortions. And so is Proposition A, or at least the paid sick leave requirements. That is also
part of the minimum wage increase. That bill?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That voters also voted for.
Exactly. Yeah. And so those are the two I'm really trying to watch this week because of what Senator Huff said and whether senators are actually going to move forward or not.
Does that have any political implications that Republicans are going after bills and measures that the people voted for?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's been mentioned many times, especially by Democrats, you know, that they're overturning the will of the people is the argument that many of the Democrats are making. And as far as the abortion proposal goes, I think Republicans have clapped back by saying, well, this is what most Missourians wanted to begin with, is that they wanted exceptions. They didn't want, abortion rights that are just wide and wide open like this. They wanted something more conservative. And so, yeah, we're definitely hearing about that. And the minimum wage, you know, I think that Republicans have really stood by that the businesses will hurt by the, if this continues to go into law. And so I'm not sure, you know, what the happy medium is on the paid sick leave and if they can find one. I know the last version, I think they were really focused on, and they were close to getting, I think, some resolution, a compromise that dealt with the really small businesses and trying to carve something out so that those businesses were especially not burdened.
Yeah, it's interesting, Elisa, because when it comes to the paid sick leave, it's easy to view things through a binary partisan lens. But some of the pushback to that was from the very small businesses. I talked to several friends of mine who own small businesses, and they say it's not viable if you have a small business, if you own a small store. And so it wasn't pushed back necessarily from like, well, these are the Republicans, you know, wanting to give benefits to the businesses. It was just like Main Street mom and pop shops who say some of the ideas and principles that work on bigger businesses don't translate to a small scale.
Yes. I think some of the regulations that were required as a result of that, some of the different paperwork and to keep track of all that and the accounting, I think I had heard that it would be a nightmare for some of the small businesses. And so I think that's where, especially like that carve out compromise that the Democrats and Republicans, I think, in the Senate were working on at one time. And so I don't know if that's still the case or not. But yeah, definitely, I think that the small businesses especially, and another thing is, you know, with these requirements of the paid sick leave, I know that the argument was made, well, there are just not going to be as many people that the business can hire. You know, maybe they were going to hire 20 and now they can only hire 10, you know, mm-hmm. in the bordering areas. So like over by you, by St. Louis, you know, it could especially impact the borders, because if the businesses can go on the other to the neighboring states and set up shop and profit more than they can in Missouri, then they may do that.
Alisa Nelson with Missouri Net covering the Missouri legislature, joining us here on 104.1 FM KMOX. Alisa, we appreciate your time as always. Thank you for joining us today, and good luck the next few days.
Thank you. Anytime.
Let us know what happens.
Okay, will do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alisa. Oh, man, isn't politics fun?
Yeah, no, I don't know how people do it or what motivates them to go in, especially into local politics. I mean, we see the drama, all the unnecessary drama in St. Louis County with the county council, in St. Louis City with the Board of Aldermen, and just kind of the shenanigans that go on there. We see what happens in the state. We see what happens at the national level. I would just be exhausted by it. There was a part, Ranja, there was an education bill that also got approval, and it's interesting because some Democrats were against the education bill because it prohibits institutions of higher education from taking, quote, adverse action against a student group based on its political, ideological, or religious beliefs or the actions of its leaders. And it's interesting because the Democrats are saying, well, that might allow schools to have discriminatory groups, but that's what the Republicans are saying when it comes to Harvard. Like, it's weird. Like, so the Democrats in our state legislature are parroting what Trump is saying to Harvard and Columbia about discriminatory language. I think it's a lot of partisanship here.
Colonel Ripper is watching on YouTube and says, I think you guys said you'd be on until 11:10 today, but I think that's Eastern time. Maybe you're out at 10:10. Nope. We are on until just after 11 o'clock because we've got Cardinals baseball happening at 12:05, a doubleheader here on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Well, Ranj, not great that contentious foreign relations and fears about visiting the United States are resulting in quote, the U.S. hemorrhaging tourism money. That's not great. So the World Travel and Tourism Council projects the United States to lose $12.5 billion in travel revenue in 2025%, a 7% dip from last year, a 22.5% drop from 2019. In March, U.S. airports that have historically served a ton of international visitors who want to go to, like, Disney and the Grand Canyon, they saw massive year-over-year declines. For instance, arrivals from the U.K. and South Korea dropped by 15%. Tourists from Germany plummeted almost 30%. And Spain and Ireland, that are generally staple of tourists, Spanish and Irish tourists fell between 24% and 33%.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm betting everything I have that
when this is,
as far as you know, when this whole thing is done and there's an honest assessment done after the fact about this whole aggressive deportation, immigration stance that Republicans have, it will end up costing us more money than it will have made us. I promise you, I guarantee it, if you're getting an honest assessment. You're going to have people try to spin it 2, 3, 4 years from now. No, we did great. We got rid of all the criminals. You cost the country a ton, billions and billions of dollars. I promise you, that will be the end result.
New York City expects a 17% decline in tourism this year, with the biggest drop coming from Canada. And in fact, Expedia, you know, the booking agency, says U.S. travel from Canada is already down 30% this year.
It's going to come from people. It will come from labor. It will come from tourists. It's going to come from so many different angles. This is ultimately going to be really bad for the country. So I mentioned yesterday that the NFL schedule will be officially released, all NFL schedules, that's happening later on tonight. But we're getting leaks here and there, purposeful nuggets.
Like Pete Hegseth?
Not that kind. Oh. No. Oh. Not that kind.
Okay.
Of games that are happening here and there. Yesterday we learned that the Kansas City Chiefs are going to play in Brazil on September 5th. Mm-hmm. We learned that they are going to play Christmas night. That'll be against the Broncos. And then we learn they're also going to play on Thanksgiving.
Really?
So the Chiefs have a game against the Cowboys at 3:30 on Thanksgiving Day. So they got a Christmas Day game, Christmas night game. They have a Thanksgiving Day game.
Yeah.
Chiefs are all over the holidays.
I'm just laughing because I'm picturing the Pete Hegseth signal where it's like, great job bombing the Houthis. And hey, who's going to watch the Chiefs on Thanksgiving with me? And everyone's like, whoa, those are two big breaking news stories.
Yeah, he likes to leak things like that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Poor guy. All right, so.
Wow, the Chiefs.
If you're a Chiefs fan, your holidays are set.
Happy holidays.
Yeah.
That's great if you have contentious family members.
I'm just going to go watch the Chiefs game.
Right.
Yeah. When we come back, the interim CEO of the International Institute of St. Louis, Blake Hamilton, is going to join us because it was in jeopardy for a while, the status of the Festival of Nations, but it's going to happen. It is going on August 23rd and 24th in Tower Grove Park. We'll talk to Blake about how it happened next on 104.1 FM KMOX. It is the Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX, and the last time we checked in on the International Festival, the Festival of Nations, which takes place because of the International Institute of St. Louis, that was a few months ago, and they were concerned about whether or not the Festival of Nations would go on as planned. It is going to, August 23rd and 24th. And to discuss it with us, Blake Hamilton is the interim CEO of the International Institute of St. Louis with us now in studio. How you doing, Blake?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
So congratulations, first of all, on getting this done, that it's going to happen. With the uncertainty from weeks and weeks ago, how do we get to the point where we now know it's going to go on?
Well, we're really able to do this event every year because of the number of volunteers and the amount of community support. And this year, that really, we've seen folks step up in incredible ways. And a lot of folks in the community who really value the festival really saw that this was a really at risk of not happening, that they really wanted to show their support. And we're thankful that they did. And, you know, we're really happy to have a large number of sponsors who really stepped up early to help ensure that this festival can continue to go on.
Was the primary reason that the Festival of Nations was in limbo because of the federal cuts to the staff at the federal cuts to funding and thus the staff at International Institute?
Well, certainly. Delays in receiving funding really put us in a critical position when it came to our available cash. And of course, our primary focus is the services that we provide to refugees and immigrants, the opportunities that we create for folks to thrive. And that is our mission. And so we didn't want to distract from our mission and knew that the cash reserves that we had needed to be devoted to service and really cause us to think, well, you know, the festival is really a great resource for the region, but we have to really focus on our core mission. But, you know, due to some of those funds being reimbursed to us and what we were owed by the federal government kind of coming in over the course of the last few months, really it's put us in a much better position. And again, with sponsors and folks stepping up saying that they want to see this happen, folks volunteering to assist, with organizing and putting it on, you know, we're being given the capacity and support in the way that makes us comfortable being able to move forward with it. And I'm really happy to do so.
So when you only have so many resources, you can't do everything. You said your primary focus or your primary mission you wanted to focus on, weren't sure you can do the festival this year. Was that interrupted in any way? Your main duties as an organization, how much was that interrupted, if at all?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, again, not having access to the funds that enables to provide the services that are really important. Connecting people to employment, getting kids enrolled in school, providing health and wellness support to families. All of those are really at the center of what we do, providing education. And those programs and services were certainly at threat with not having the funding that was really dedicated to performing that. We invested our own resources in ensuring that those could continue and get us through until we did start to see federal funding again. But we had to necessarily scale back. You mentioned we had to engage in furloughs, and that was really challenging for us as an organization to know what we can do and then suddenly not have the resources to be able to do it. We did see federal funding cuts to programs such as refugee resettlement, which is still not back online. We've seen cuts to our citizenship program, which provided classroom education for refugees and anybody who's on the path to citizenship to learn about civics. I always say, who is most capable of passing the citizenship test? It's really like a fifth grader who's mm-hmm. just taken a civics course, right? It is that information that is about our democracy and how this country operates in our history that is critical to being able to pass that test. And we had received for nearly 20 years funding to provide that sort of education to immigrants and refugees who are on that path. And that funding was terminated. We were very thankful that we had volunteers who had been connected with that program for nearly a decade who came to us and said, we understand that there's no funding for this program, but we feel like we're capable of seeing it through with this cohort. And it's really that sort of dedication and commitment from the community that really enables us to march forward with our services. And that same type of commitment is helping us ensure that we do have a Festival of Nations this year.
I know there's a lot of confusion regarding the United States and how welcoming it is to immigrants right now. But let's focus on St. Louis mm-hmm. and the perception. Is St. Louis among the community of immigrants who are finding a place to make their new home? Is it more St. Louis is a dangerous city with high crime rates, or is it St. Louis is a great place for immigrants? Where are we with that?
St. Louis has a reputation for being very welcoming. I mean, there's a number of amenities and resources. It isn't just the International Institute, but many others that are serving immigrants. And we have the Office of New Americans here in the city and very welcoming policies that really support immigrant business development as well. And those are all key factors in attracting folks to our region. Of course, the region isn't without its challenges and its reputation that causes pause to mm-hmm. some. But those who come here and are able to establish themselves and their families and find a safe place and a place where they can get a job that makes ends meet and helps their families thrive, that's the story that folks tell. And when that gets into communities, people see that it's a real opportunity. It's not just something that's advertised, but something that people are living and experiencing and taking advantage of that they too could take advantage of in this environment.
And St. Louis is an area, a region that we know loses population, mm-hmm. whether it's in the city limits or even outside the city. So attracting people to come here, I think, should be a goal for all of us. It is when you are trying to welcome people in, is that part of the pitch that, look, St. Louis could use you? We could be, you could help us, we can help you. Is that kind of how it goes?
Yes. I mean, we talk about housing and cost of living and the advantages that St. Louis has compared to major immigration hubs on either coast. St. Louis has a competitive advantage economically to be able to make that American dream more attainable with our low cost of living and ample housing available. And that is something that the city and the region at large greatly benefits from. This is an increase in tax base, an increase in workers. When we see a declining population. It's not just overall numbers, but it's an aging population as well. Immigrants are disproportionately young and of working age and able to fill open positions that are chronically open. We work with, last year we worked with more than 130 employers that put nearly 400 folks to work. And these opportunities that this region has are ones that are very appealing for immigrants who are looking to restart their lives. And the pitch is, you know, what they can have by coming here and the opportunities that exist, but also it's about being part of something and rebuilding this region. And people have an interest in being a part of something, and they see that there are things worth investing in here in St. Louis.
Yeah, I feel like we have so much more room for immigrants to come here and help grow the community for sure. Well, in that national uncertainty now, when we're looking at the global perception of the United States and the Trump administration crackdown on illegal immigration and how that's leaked over to immigrants who are here legally, who do have visas, and how due process is being questioned here. How have you seen that affect immigrants who are in our area legally, in the St. Louis bi-state area legally?
It creates a tremendous amount of fear and apprehension. Folks, regardless of presence, know that they could be just a traffic stop away from being caught up in proceedings and immense court costs and fees that could be life-changing for them and separate them from their families. And in fact, we have our own immigration services at the International Institute, including an immigration attorney who is representing several cases of individuals who were here, admitted legally, had legal presence in the United States, and have been caught up in this enforcement acts that have been taking place, and themselves have been separated from their families and working very hard to try to get those families reunified. What has been created, it really creates a lot of fear for everybody. And when that fear exists, it makes people reticent to send their kids to school, to access services like those available at the International Institute that can help with things like employment, things like accessing healthcare or mental health services. And when people don't access services they need, our region at large is less healthy. It's less safe because we have so many people who are afraid to access services and access resources that they're entitled to. Obviously the threat of being separated from one's family, the threat of being erroneously deported is real. And it's something that impacts people's daily lives.
And just as a quick clarification, if a listener is going, well, if you have your visa, why are you nervous? Well, that's the thing. Let's say you are here legally, you have your visa, and something as little as a fender bender that puts you in contact with law enforcement, if they decide it doesn't matter that you're here legally, we're moving forward, we're going to separate you without that due process. How could you not live in fear? To think a speeding ticket, anything.
Any of us would.
Yeah.
Any of us.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely understandable. We have, an environment here that is really threatening to mm-hmm. individuals. And again, you could just be caught in the wrong place at the wrong time and be subject to this. But there are organizations like the Institute, like the MICA Project, like Monarch, and many other service providers within the Immigrant Service Provider Network here in St. Louis that are here to support these individuals. There are far more cases like this than really we have the capacity to support as a region in terms of providing legal assistance. But we ask that anyone who needs that assistance have access to it. And so when we talk about things like changing the system to expedite more deportations, that is a threat to the legal system. That's a threat to the way that we have always operated as a country, and it puts an incredible fear inside of all of us. It really should, because these folks who are here legally present, just like you and me, could be deported just like you and me. And that's a real big challenge. I often ask people, I say, well, if you got stopped, how would you prove that you're a citizen?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair question.
It's yeah. not something yeah. that is easily handled, but
yeah.
we're very thankful for the many resources that this region has to support the individuals who really need it this time. But we always need more folks interested in supporting in many ways. The Festival of Nations, yeah. for example, always relies on volunteers, but as an organization writ large, we rely on volunteers and supporters to help us do what we do every day.
Festival of Nations will happen August 23rd and 24th at Tower Grove Park here in St. Louis because of the International Institute of St. Louis. Blake Hamilton, we appreciate you coming in. Best of luck in moving forward, and we're very glad that this is going to go on as planned. So thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
That is Blake Hamilton, the interim CEO with the International Institute of St. Louis. It's Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Well, if you recall, it wasn't that long ago, within the last several weeks, that President Trump had a conversation with Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred, and it is thought that the former president, or the current president, had told Manfred that Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. And we know that Pete has been banned from the Hall of Fame because he bet on baseball, which is an absolute no-no in sports. But he did it anyway. And now, as of last night, the commissioner released a statement, and the statement says that Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson, who was part of the Black Sox scandal in 1919 when eight players presumably took money to throw the World Series, so that all these players now are eligible for the Hall of Fame because their bans are eliminated once they die. So once the players have died, they are now removed from the ineligible list. So now Shoeless Joe and Pete Rose, two of the most famous people who have been left out of the Hall of Fame for gambling, are now eligible for it. I think Shoeless Joe should be in. That's a different thing. Pete Rose.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I know people think he paid his debt. And what's the big deal? He never bet on his team to lose, which I don't know if we know that for certain. But what we do know is that he bet prolifically on the Cincinnati Reds when he was player manager. We know he did that. And just giving him the benefit of the doubt that he never bet against his own team, that's not the problem. The problem is the nights that he didn't bet for them, because you're signaling to bookies that you don't think you can win that night. That's still a problem. And it is the one infraction in sports, I think, that a sport cannot overcome. Fine, you've got guys taking HGH and hitting monster home runs. Great. Okay. I know some people don't like it. I don't care about it that much. But if the fan watching a game every night isn't quite sure that the players aren't throwing the game or don't have money on the game, that will absolutely kill a sport.
Yeah, because your argument, rightly so, is that the one infraction, the one sin you cannot commit, is compromising the integrity of the competition because
that's correct.
It's over. It's just, it ruins the game. You can't come back from it. I get that. And I do want to get back to Pete Rose as well. But why is it different? Why is Shoeless Joe different than Pete Rose if both were betting / gambling scandals?
So Shoeless Joe, in the World Series that he was supposed to throw, hit like 375. He had a big play in the outfield. He threw a guy out at home. There's no indication that he played poorly on purpose. That's number one. Number two, people who know more about it, and historians have said that he was illiterate and really didn't quite understand the concept of the conspiracy of what was supposed to be going on. He was just owed back pay from Charlie Comiskey, who was one of the cheapest owners in the history of any sport. Just a terrible guy. And he was owed something like, I don't know, $5,000 or maybe more than that. And he wanted his back pay. So he thought he was going to get it somewhere else. But there's no indication he actually ever did anything to... We pretty much know that he took the money, which sounds disqualifying. But it also sounds like, because he was illiterate, maybe not the brightest guy, didn't really know what was going on. Pete Rose knew full well what he was... He had a bookie. You don't just get a bookie thrown at you. You seek out a bookie. You seek out people that you can place bets when betting is illegal.
Yeah.
So he knew exactly what he was doing.
So
I have no sympathy for Pete Rose. And I know that there are people out there that say the man paid his debt. Let him in. Not, well, I mean, he's dead now, but I don't know. Screw Pete Rose.
So if this new rule is once you're dead, your sins are forgiven and you can go to the Hall of Fame, would that automatically mean that when Mark McGwire and all these performance-enhancing
Barry Bonds,
drug guys die, then you get to put them in?
Yeah. Yeah. And I this may sound hypocritical. I don't think it does, but I understand why you might think it sounds that way. The HGH, the steroid guys, I don't look at them the same way I look at gamblers. I don't look at them the same way I look at people who threaten the integrity of the competition. And what I mean is, you cannot have a sport where people watching it aren't quite sure if the player on the field is throwing the game, making an error on purpose, throwing a wild pitch because they've got money on the side. That's unsurvivable. It's one thing if you're cheating to try and hit more home runs or to stay on the field and to recover quicker from injury. That's one thing. But if people watching think that you're not trying your hardest because you might have money coming in if you don't try your hardest, that's the kind of thing that will end a sport.
So here's a statement from Christopher Scalia, the son of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Now, Christopher Scalia wants Pete Rose in. We'd love to get him on, talk about why he wants Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. However, this statement, I want to get your thoughts on it. Here's what he said. There's a case to be made that it is hypocritical for a league now in cahoots with a sports book, as is Major League Baseball, to ban someone for betting. On the other hand, the league may reason that its embrace of legalized sports gambling makes it all the more important to mark a clear boundary between the habits of fans and the vices of league employees. And I agree. Like I said, that's not about Pete Rose itself. It's when people bring up, well, what about Major League Baseball, you know, now having sports books? Christopher Scalia is saying, yeah, but that actually almost makes the boundary line that much more important. If you're going to have Major League Baseball and sports books in cahoots, you got to make sure there's a line between players and fans.
Right. Well, and it's not that difficult. It's very easy. All you have to say is, yes, we are making money from FanDuel and DraftKings or BetMGM or whatever, but that's for the fans. You're a player. You're a coach. You're a manager. You're not allowed. Sorry, it's very, very simple to me. So I hope Pete Rose does not get in. It's not going to ruin my life if he does, but I don't think he deserves it. I think he ruined his chance.
Now, the John Rooney Conversation on KMOX, sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and if you're a Missourian, we're for you.
The 3-2 pitch in the ninth inning with two outs. A swing, and the ball is popped into short right center field. A long run. Walker makes the catch. That's a Redbird winner. The Cardinals hang on to beat the Phillies 3-2. They've won 9 in a row.
Birds are in good shape right now. As you heard John Rooney say, they've won 9 straight games. They are hoping for 2 games today. We'll get the update from John as he joins us from the ballpark. It is the Cardinals and Phillies, a split doubleheader today. What's going on, John? How's the rain looking?
We have the tarp on the field, but players are out playing catch, and the rain is supposed to get out of here right around game time. So we might have a slight delay, but it appears we're going to get the doubleheader in and have the day off in Kansas City and then play a really good Kansas City team, come home and play a really good Detroit team. I mean, the stretch of games we're in right now, a great challenge for a Cardinal team that is playing very well.
Yeah, so I want to get to the Cardinals here, but we were just talking, Amy and I, about Rob Manfred, who has basically reinstated guys like Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson for the Hall of Fame, saying that them being on the ineligible list goes away when they die. So what are your thoughts on that?
I don't get much into the Hall of Fame. I don't have a vote with it. I think they are Hall of Famers, but you know, that's for a committee and the writers to decide. I have no say in it.
All right. So the Cardinals will have this series, this doubleheader today. It's a split doubleheader. And they've played really good baseball. Everything has gone well for them. They've won 9 straight. As you kind of step back and look at them over these last 9 games, what do you think?
Well, I think they're doing everything well. I think they're catching the ball, for one thing. They're playing terrific defense, the outfield defense, like Walker's last play. And somebody commented, he couldn't make that play last year. And one reason, he wouldn't have been out there, for one thing. He would have been replaced by probably Newt Barr slipping over there and Ciani coming in to play. Or if Ciani was already in the game, as he was most of the time, he covered a lot of ground. But I credit Walker. I credit Scott, Newt Barr, all working very hard and diligently with John Jay to improve to the point where they are taking runs away from the opponents and making life a whole lot easier for the starting pitching. The starting pitching has been going deeper. The bullpen is beginning to take shape, and Kyle Leahy has a lot to do with that. Gordon Graceffo hasn't had a lot of work, but what we've seen from him has been spectacular. And it would have been nice to bring up McGreevy to start one of these games today, but he'd be pitching on short rest after throwing over 90 pitches the last time out. He'd be a day short. And so Fetty is getting the start in game one, but there's Steven Matz, who's been stretched out and looked really good his last relief appearance and has looked good as a starter a couple of times. He's ready to go to follow up Fetty today. So it seems like the Cardinals have things in line, and they are believing that when they come to the ballpark, they can win and they will win. I know years ago when the White Sox went into Minnesota, they thought they could beat Minnesota, but Minnesota knew they could beat the White Sox.
Yeah.
There's a difference. Right now, the Cardinals really feel and know that they are in every ball game and have a chance to win when they come to the park.
Fetty in game one, Sonny Gray will pitch in game two. And one thing Cardinals starters have done a whole lot better over the last couple of weeks is go deeper into games. It was a problem in the first couple of weeks of the season, putting stress on the bullpen. But, John, they've corrected that. They've done a whole lot better in that area lately.
And the bullpen didn't really respond all that well. Ryan Fernandez just couldn't find his stride that we saw when he started out last year as a Rule 5 pick. I mean, he was spectacular. And I'm counting on him fixing whatever the problem has been and coming back. He hasn't done it yet. But Roycroft has been able to make some adjustments. And talking with him, he said, when you get to this stage, most of the troubles are in your head. It's a mental thing. And he feels like he's overcome some of that. And perhaps Ryan Fernandez has to do the same, because when he's on, he has a really good slider. But we didn't have that early. And then lining up the bullpen with Leahy coming on and getting to Helsley, where he's had a couple of blown saves, but with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and he had a wipeout slider the other night when he saved game one here on Monday. All of that added up. We're getting great production out of the catching. Didn't even talk about the catchers. Pedro Páez has done a good job behind the plate. So has Joel Pozo. But they give you good at-bats on top of what they're doing, and they'll eventually ease Herrera back into some catching. But what Herrera's doing as a designated hitter, the man can hit, and when he's done hitting, he goes out and hits some more. That's what's exciting to watch about this team. And Mason Wynn is picking up more confidence as well. It's not the same guy every day. That's what I like about it, and you find that with winning ball clubs.
We talked about this on the Gas House Gang on Monday a little bit, but you know, the Cardinals sweep a team like the Pirates. That's a team you're supposed to beat. They're not particularly good. Now they're playing against Philly. Do games against the Phillies or the Tigers, who are playing really well this year, wins against teams like that, does that matter more to you?
I don't think it matters because of the long schedule, Chris. You have to win today. I don't care who you're playing. And some of those teams, and Mike Shannon used to caution us by saying, look, teams like the Pirates, or at the time the Reds and some of the others, they don't know they're bad yet. And here they are out giving the Cardinals the best possible game they can give them. I mean, the Cardinals dropped 2 out of 3 in Pittsburgh, but they were able to sweep them at home because they were able to get their game in line. But I think the guys, they accept the challenge, but right now they're not really looking at the other team. They're preparing for who they're going to face on the mound that day. And if it happens to be Paul Skeens, it's Paul Skeens. If it happens to be Luzardo in game one, Nola in game two, they're getting ready for them. And they know who the good teams are. They know that they feel like they can play against those good teams. It's the challenge of going out and getting it done, and they've been doing it lately. I mean, to take two out of three from the Mets after losing the series opener, and that's where the winning streak started. And then to go into Washington, where the Cardinals have had some trouble in late innings, they were able to put games away, like Sunday's game with two in the seventh and two in the eighth, to sweep the Washington Nationals. And now here in Philadelphia, to hang on and win a one-run game on the road, I think they're turning the corner as far as road games go and as far as a young team learning how to win. And that has been the fun thing about watching this team grow.
Yeah, John, there were a lot of question marks regarding this team going into the season. And I know players have to play. That's ultimately what it comes down to. But when you do have the option or possibility of moving pieces around, how much credit do you give to manager Ollie Marmol then with some of the success that we're seeing, both with the growth of the players and in the standings?
Well, I'll tell you something Ollie has been able to do is just stay even keel, even when they were losing those close one-run games. They were 0-5 in one-run games right out of the gate, and games that were more than winnable. They've only been out of two games, period, of all they've played, and we've played over 40 games now. But Ollie has stayed the same, and he has kept his belief that he likes this roster. But this is a roster, when you look at it, that has major league experience. It's not like they're bringing up the Memphis Redbirds and saying, go get them against the National League and in interleague games. There are guys with playing time. Walker has playing time. Scott has a little bit. Not as much as some others, but Burleson has had some time in the big leagues. So has Gorman, and so has Lars Nootbaar. You go up and down, and last year, a very valuable year for Pajes behind the plate. These aren't guys who are just brand new, but yet they're not battle-tested over 2, 3, 4 years where you really have a great feel for what they can do, and you have to find that out. After all, they thought they were good enough to sign them and bring them in, put them on the roster, and Ollie is using the guys he has on that roster, and right now they're playing well, and it's somebody contributing in a great way, differently, night in and night out.
All right, as we say goodbye here, John, we got the word not too long ago within the last 10 minutes.
I've got to redo the whole Philly lineup here and all that. I mean, it's a different lineup from the other night because you have a right-hander going instead of Libertor. So I have to kind of rework things here and get that going. So it's I think we're going to get started close to on time. I can't see downtown Philadelphia from the booth here like we can on a nice clear day, where it's a beautiful view from our booth here at Citizens Bank Park. But that is supposed to clear out, and they haven't lifted the tarp yet, but more and more players are out playing catch, getting a little work in. It's cool here in the low 60s and probably won't get much higher than about 62 or 3, and a strong wind blowing out to left field, and that's where a pitcher has to keep the ball down in this little ballpark. So that's what's ahead today.
Yeah, Matt Carpenter announced he's retiring today. But just wanted to get your thoughts on him and his career in St. Louis.
He had a terrific career. Yeah. And when he came up and set a single-season record for doubles, passing Stan Musial, and then he had a power surge there later on, and he had some rough days when he left the Cardinals but came back, made a terrific contribution to the clubhouse, and had some big hits on the field as well. And I thought his leadership was key to some of these young players. Matt Carpenter, good guy, and he'll be wearing one of those red jackets as a Cardinal Hall of Famer sometime in the future.
All right, pregame show is coming up at 11:10 with Tom Ackerman, and this man, John Rooney, is on the call. Ricky Horton
Tell
is there as well.
Tell Tom not to mess it up.
I haven't seen him yet, so I'll let you know when I do.
All right, sounds good. Have a great am I with you on Friday?
You better believe it.
Okay, if I have to.
You have no choice.
All right.
Sorry.
All right.
Thank
Bye,
you.
John.
Bye. Always good to be with you. Bye.
John Rooney on the call today. 11:10 pregame show with Ackerman. Then the first pitch, 12:05. Game two, we'll have a 4:20 pregame show with Matt Pauly and a 5:15 first pitch. Cardinals and Phillies, a doubleheader in Pennsylvania today. How about that, Amy? You ready to go?
I'm
at least
super ready.
At least 18 hours of baseball today on KMOX. That's what I say. We mentioned it with John Rooney, the radio voice of the Cardinals, just a few moments ago. Today, a Cardinal great I think we could call him that because he is very likely going to be a Cardinals Hall of Famer someday. Matt Carpenter, who played in 14 seasons in Major League Baseball, has decided to officially call it a career and talked with Sports Spectrum earlier today, and he made that announcement.
Wanted to take this opportunity on this podcast here with you and officially announce my retirement from the game of baseball. Was very fortunate enough to play, for some great organizations, and had quite a thrill being able to don the St. Louis Cardinals logo for many years. A brief stint with the New York Yankees and also the San Diego Padres. And, I could thank a lot of people and I will. But I think I've got to start with my family. My wife, Mackenzie, anybody who's played professional baseball knows that it takes a really strong woman at home, to get through, what that life looks like. And she was the rock in our household that was able for me to go out and play the game that I loved for so long. And so I can't start without thanking her. And then obviously my parents, my mom, my dad. Having kids now, you realize the sacrifices you make for your own children coming up from the time that they're walking or born. And then and obviously through youth sports, my dad was my coach. And my love for the game of baseball came from his love of the game of baseball. He pretty much taught me everything that I know about the game. So obviously a huge thank you to them. And I just wanted to get that out there. And I'm excited for what's next and getting to spend some much needed quality time with my wife and kids on a more consistent basis now that, you put the cleats up. It's exciting stuff.
Matt Carpenter, after 14 seasons in Major League Baseball, has officially announced that he is done in the game of baseball. So it's sad to see a career come to an end, but he's still playing at 38, mm-hmm. which is that's ancient. Up there. Yeah, it's ancient for a baseball player, for any professional athlete, to still be going at the age of 38, and he hangs it up. All-star three times, MVP voting. He finished fourth one year, won a Silver Slugger that same year.
Technically a World Series champion. Didn't play in the postseason in 2011, but right. Did debut with the team that year.
Got a ring. Which is good. Yeah. So it's, and the only...
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think the only player that I ever really liked that didn't wear batting gloves. I'm always
batting gloves.
He didn't wear batting gloves.
I'm looking at a picture. Oh my gosh. Doesn't that hurt? Not wearing batting gloves?
I mean, I don't like it.
You don't even play baseball.
I know. I don't like it. I don't like looking at it.
Gloves?
I just wish he would have put some batting gloves on.
Yeah. It does look a little naked now. I never noticed it.
You didn't?
No.
Yeah, that was his thing. Moises Alou did it. I didn't like him, though. He was kind of a
jerk. He had really
jerk.
Calloused hands?
Had to have.
Because, have you ever gone, as a kid, every kid has gone to batting cages. And I didn't play baseball, but we went to the batting cages. You always left the batting cages with blisters.
Amy, you know the thing about Moises Alou?
No.
You don't? Well, he had calluses. And
ew, oh no.
Do you want to know what he said? He said his secret to hardening the skin on his hands so that he could hold the baseball bat without gloves.
Yeah.
He went pee-pee on them.
Every day?
I don't know. He said he did it in the shower, and that's how he developed it, which I think is complete non-scientific nonsense, but that's what he said. Moises Alou is very well known for that. That is his
thing. The acidic bile...
I get
that he peed on his hands every day.
I don't know. That's what he said. And he said it worked. But he is famous for that.
Can you call Matt Carpenter and see if he tried that?
No, we don't need to ask. Well, okay, we could.
I feel like that's investigative reporting.
I'll tell you what, let's get Carpenter on some point here in the next several days if we can. And I'm going to ask him. I'm going to ask him if he ever did that.
I mean, because honestly, you do. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. If you've ever gone to the batting cages and you're not a baseball player, which I wasn't, I didn't play softball. I would play baseball in the yard, play with friends. I didn't have batting gloves. I didn't bring batting gloves to the batting cages. To me, not as a baseball player, it was like bringing your own bowling shoes. Who does that?
Well, when I was a kid playing Little League Baseball, it was a big deal if you got a pair of batting gloves.
Yeah.
And that was in the 80s when some guys only wore one batting glove. Do you remember that time? Where it was just the bottom hand. The bottom hand would have a batting glove.
Yeah.
And the top hand would be free. And a lot of major leaguers did that too. So when you got a batting glove, it was a cool thing. When you got two batting gloves, oh my God.
Yeah.
You were otherworldly.
You know, Mark McGuire threw his batting glove. I got his batting glove. He threw it to me when I was a kid.
Do you still have it?
No, because I gave it to my friend who brought me to the game.
Let me give you another piece of history.
Okay.
The person who is credited with starting the batting glove thing in Major League Baseball, Hawk Harrelson, who was a player and then the White Sox longtime TV guy. You know, the guy who says, he gone. That guy?
Yeah.
That guy.
Huh.
He took his golf glove, and he used it
because they look like golf gloves.
That's what he did, and that's where batting gloves started.
Interesting, you know. And now you can go to a CYC game for fourth graders; they've got sliding mitts. You've never seen kids decked out like CYC.
Oh, the sliding
games.
The oven mitt looking thing. I hate
those. It's all about the gear now.
I know. That's one of my old man things. I hate those. I hate the oven mitt. Guys out there with an oven mitt.
It's pretty big.
It is. It looks stupid. I don't like it. Hey, we're going to come back tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Whoa. I want a little more enthusiasm out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to come back tomorrow at 9 o'clock. But if you missed anything in the abbreviated show that we have done today, you know where to find it on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Might as well download it because you can listen to both Cardinals games today right there from it. You better do that, son. All right, back tomorrow at 9. That's Amy Markscores. I'm Chris Ranji. Cardinals baseball is next. Two games today on KMOX.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.